Hello and welcome to the 12th episode of Pull the Trigger. Hey. I believe we've made it 12 episodes.
Hey!
I'm your host, Trigger, and with me are founding members of Trash Rocket, Hodge, and Monster.
Hey!
Oh, and he's taking off the mic.
I'm taking off the mic.
Our high fives are serious.
So that's how we do
Earthquake.
Things.
Earthquake.
So what we'll do today is talk a little bit about music for a change.
What? We do that?
Yeah, I figured why not.
I thought we were talking politics. No, not even going to do that.
No,
let's talk about
touch
politics.
There's
not.
I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
I'll see a 12-foot pole. No, I'm just kidding.
So, I've noticed on the Facebooks, the Instagrams, and all of that stuff, you all have a show coming up?
What?
Y'all want to talk about the show you all have coming up?
Oh, the April 11th one.
April 11th at Reclaim. We'll be opening. It's with this band from, I don't actually remember where, Everyday Catastrophe. I'm always messing up the first word. I apologize. They're like a industrial type band. And then the headliner's Chemtrails with Fredericksburg's own Noah Cabito and other people who also I'm forgetting their names.
Yay.
It's a very it'll be a very visual show just for Chemtrails, if nothing else. They use a lot with the video because that's what Noah does. He does it well.
Choice.
You know Noah.
Yeah. I was in band with him. I remember the first time I ever met Noah, he was behind me when I...
Oh, you told me.
I was in sixth grade band.
Oh,
and I was playing
band
the orchestra bills or whatever.
Oh.
And then
Ms. Davis was saying, well, I need you to play in the seventh grade show too.
Hmm.
I was like, okay. And then Noah was behind me with the crash cymbals. I did not know Noah was behind me with the crash cymbals. And Noah doesn't tap them. Bam! Scares the ever living shit out of me.
You know what? Sounds like Noah.
That's how I met him.
That's how I met Noah.
So,
now I've done stuff with him through the years too.
But like, yeah,
a lot of more recordings than shows. But yeah.
Yeah. But so we've got that. We'll all be at the show because apparently they're playing, so I guess they have to be at the show.
Got
to
be there.
We should do an episode. No, I'm just kidding. We don't have the time.
You just sit there and you just phone it in, play the record. Totally Aphex Twin it, you know, you're just sitting on the ground pressing buttons.
Like pressing buttons.
She does.
I press Hodge's buttons all the time.
Oh, those kind of buttons. Okay. Yes, she does. If I still had hair, it'd be gone by now anyway.
Because of me.
So the music tonight, though.
Oh, whoa.
I remember I said, hey, let's do Burial with Massive Attack and Portishead. I said, it would work. Now, I had no idea that that was not beyond coincidence.
Oh, yeah.
And if you'd have said, I'll place a bet with you, Trig, and tell you that Bristol appears on this particular... Bristol, England, appears on this list more than any other city tied with Compton and only beaten by... Atlanta, I would have taken that bet. And I would have lost. Because all three of our acts are from Bristol, England tonight.
That's
so
crazy.
That's probably why I heard similarities. I said, well, it'll work with them. It'll work with them because they definitely influenced by them. Okay. Now, that being said, I'm going to approach Burial a little bit differently because when I listened to this album, I could not come up with a track-by-track analysis, and I don't think that was the point of this album. I do think that Burial created an album in every sense of the word. I mean, there's lyrics there, but I felt the lyrics were more along the lines of, say, Sigur Rós, Cocteau Twins. They're there, but I don't think that's the point of them.
Yeah.
It's just like another instrument.
An instrument. That's exactly what I said. So from 2007, we have Burial's Untrue. I listened to it on Apple Lossless because I can't find a physical copy of this record anywhere.
Same here.
Which is a shame because I'd really like to find a physical copy of this record.
It's on the top 100 and there's no physical.
I can't find a physical copy anywhere. It might be just out of print right now.
That is nuts.
It'll come back in the print after this episode.
After this episode, and you know, when they hear what I've said. And
they're going to think we're bullshitting.
Yeah, I was crying for 3.5 hours after this album.
He's being serious.
Inconsolable. But I said though this album was, that it's about the feeling and it's about the mood, and I feel it's more important where it takes you than anything else, which is what I really loved about it. And I looked at it, the lyrical usage on this particular album is very similar to that of Chicago house style of the late 1990s, but it's pitched down and looped in most of the cases. So I felt that was unique. And what I like is the varying forms of the fidelity within the songs. You can hear the high fidelity of the treble and the high fidelity of, you know, the cymbals and even the drums that are not the bass. Very, very high fidelity. And then, of course, there's the records pops and cracks all throughout this record. Lowers the fidelity on that. Obviously, when you lower the fidelity a bit, when you pitch down the vocals,
right,
and it reverbed them and dried them, wetted them out, and then there's a lot going on there from the production side, and I feel though it was so interesting. I will say this though, the bass on this record, definitely, I know my neighbors heard it. It's a lot.
Yeah, it was.
They'll learn to appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. They learned what 27 hertz feels like.
I probably would have vomited.
It was.
I'm a baby.
I was loving it.
Hodge knows.
Here was the thing. Like,
oh, that one.
The bass was so loud.
Yeah.
And I wasn't listening to it that loud, but the bass one was hitting so hard it was literally dimming the lights.
Holy
on my lamps.
Holy moly.
It was,
okay, I did not have that experience.
That's intense, dude. Yeah.
There was some bass guys. I was like, all right, this is sweet. My neighbors, I'm sure, with their newborn, probably not.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, you didn't tell me that.
Yeah, that changes everything. What
it
the heck?
It does.
Like, yeah, I was hanging on. And then, of course, I heard the break beats that were similar to like that of the big beat style. Except the difference is, you know, the big beat, like your Chemical Brothers, your Fatboy Slim, your Prodigies. They all, like, obviously overmodulate big beat, hence, yes, you know, blah, 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 blah. It was there, but, you know, clear perspective to hear. It's not overmodulated. This album, folks, the only thing I could say is it's a journey to be undertaken, if that makes any sense whatsoever. It feels like you're riding a roller coaster at night. And the reason I said that is because at the end of the day, you're probably okay.
Mm-hmm.
But during the entire ride, you're completely and absolutely unsettled. And that's what this album did.
Okay.
And I thought that was fantastic. I can't really better describe this album, folks. The only thing that I can really tell you to do is give it a listen. You should give it a listen. This album does deserve the flowers of being in a top 100 list for sure. I don't know where you'd put it on this list. You all said, what, 94? To me, that feels a little low. I don't know if I'd put a top 50 or anything like that, but
right,
it was a great, I loved it. I can't really tell you all if a track stands out to me because none of them did. And I don't feel if I told you that there was an album or a song on the album that stuck out, I wouldn't be doing this album justice. I want to keep it short. I want to tell you this, though. The descriptions online say it's a dubstep album. I don't know where the hell they're getting that from. I'm not hearing the wub, 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 wub on it. So definitely sort of a unique album of its time, 2007. I'm not really putting anything to it that sounds like it. So, yeah, kudos, Burial.
A lot of buzz when it came out. I remember hearing about it.
What was interesting, though, he very rarely apparently does interviews. So...
And I saw the, what was it, before I realized it was Burial, I think I even saw the cover, and it made me think of, like, one of the album covers from what is that face? Rabbit and, the Rabbit guy, Uncle.
Oh.
That's all. I don't know Rabbit. Why I even brought that up.
Uncle, the band, that was DJ Shadow and...
Yeah, yeah, just the, like...
I forget who else is
and
in
And then
there.
I was like, oh, wait, this is something called Burial. Because okay. It is a, I don't know.
I could see that working.
That cover sticks out to me. Too.
Yeah.
There
was that, what's that game? Was it Limbo? Sort of reminds me a little of that.
The one that you can reverse and get to try something. Yeah, they just had an anniversary edition of that game come out. Go get it. I did.
It's like
Limbo.
It's like Happy. No, Angry Braid. Birds. Oh, no, Flappy Bird.
Braid. You talking about Braid?
No, Limbo, like where you... It's a little black and white video game. It's
it is Limbo. Okay, I also have that. I was thinking of Braid when you said that. But yeah, Limbo from the Play Dead group. Yeah. It's only released two
games.
Is this
old people stuff you're talking about?
Not really.
No, this was it's like indie games. They've only released Limbo and Inside. Nerds, and since before COVID, games. They've had a third game. They sent screenshots, but it hasn't come out yet. The studio's called Play Dead. Oh. Really good. Now, I was thinking Braid when you first said that. No. Braid just had an anniversary edition.
That's neat.
So now we're going to get into, I feel, the album that started all of this. And it is going to be Massive Attack Blue Lines 1991. I'm holding it in my hands. This, I believe, is what they call an LP.
Ooh, that's a nice sound there.
Fancy.
A long play.
That is, I'm assuming, the 2012 remaster. It's a little bit cleaner than the original one.
That's a 91. Came out in 91.
91.
Yeah.
What a freaking year.
That's what my thing was, and I was listening to it. I thought it was 93, the longest time. So I learned something new, and then I thought about it, and I said that this album definitely deserves its kudos because there's nothing in 91 that sounds like this album.
Right.
Nothing. So, Massive Attack, congrats. You made a truly original album.
I honestly never heard of Massive Attack. And did not know what to expect, and it was a beautiful surprise.
Have you seen the show House?
Yes.
The theme song is Massive Attack.
Is it really? Yes.
It's from their mezzanine.
Teardrop.
Ah, okay. That's, you know, one way to and get that reminds people. Me of Jenna. Duh.
Because then we go, oh, you've seen House? That's how you...
So the first track, Safe From Harm. I'm just going to point out some...
Bassline.
Band from Ireland... might have stolen the bass line on this track.
Cranberries?
Yeah, sure, we'll go with Cranberries. Around 1996, during their recording of an album.
Pop?
And yeah, Miami's bass line. Yeah, you stole that. I don't care what they say.
Us three. No, you two.
I didn't do anything.
But the opening track, of course, it sets the tone real quick. That deep-rooting bass line, like you were saying. Shara Nelson's soulful vocals are perfect. Menacing, hypnotic.
Yeah.
That was the words that I was coming up with. Dark grooves, underpinning lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Could you get that beat and the bass line going? It does become very hypnotic.
Looking for that security and that chaotic world, which makes sense to me these days.
Like, I had to listen to it a few times because I was like, oh, it's the end now?
Mm-hmm. No, I love this record.
Yeah.
This, like, today's another of me fanboying out quite a bit because all three of the records I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
He does.
We have the looping guitar sample from Billy Cobham's Stratus.
Okay.
Learn that. So it gives it that eerie tension. But yeah, that band from Ireland, you should give credit where credit is due.
Just are you talking about you two?
Yeah.
I'm totally, so smart.
They totally stole this bass line. All right.
Well, I mean, Paul McCartney says you can steal bass lines.
I guess.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. He said you can steal bass lines. It's a totally different song.
I've got to start.
That's what just Vanilla Ice said.
Right. It's that itty bitty ting. That's the difference.
Oh, yeah. Ding, 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 ding. And he's saying that with such a straight face. Like, yeah. You know, you don't believe what you're saying, man.
And then there's the next track, One Love.
One Love. Not that one.
Now, I'm going to talk about, like, dub.
Let's get together.
Inspired. Obviously, this track is dub inspired, not dubstep, but there's some dub recordings. Horace Andy's falsetto, of course, is used. What I like here is it's that sluggish but immersive sound in the beat. The deep bass line, of course, makes you feel it's wrapping around you. It's almost meditative.
Yeah.
It's drawing, obviously, heavy from that dub and reggae stuff from Jamaica. Tricky Kid, otherwise known as Tricky, still part of the band at this time. Very inspired by what's going on in the Caribbean.
But as you were saying earlier, not his distinct voice we all would come to know.
Yeah, the voice that we've heard is all grovelly and sounds like he smokes 100,000 cigarettes
a day. Like Fifth Element, he has his voice. You just know it's tricky.
Yeah. And I was surprised to hear it so clear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever. What does
but,
that
mean? What I love about this particular record, and I mm-hmm. guess we'll talk about it in the title track next, is I don't... It doesn't vary too much that it's off-putting, but at the same time, none of the tracks together really sound exactly the same either. So it was that beautiful master blend to keep you from getting bored, mm-hmm. to change it up enough, but at the same time keep elements of what is making this album cohesive work.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really thinking, like verbalizing that, but yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Because see, the next track... You get that rolling groove, and 3D and Daddy G have that confident rhyme that they're coming with. You have that jazzy early 90s boom bap feel, mm-hmm. layered samples, warm synths. Great tune, by the way. Loved it. And this is going to be a lot of, it's a great trick. It's a great trick. And next song, it's a great trick. Love this album. This is another 9.5 out of 10 album for
these folks. We'll start releasing remixes that are inspired by this podcast, and there'll be him going, this is a great thing.
You have homework, Hodge.
So we've got to find some records, apparently, there are records on here that I don't like, but this week, like them all. Next track, Be Thankful for What You've Got.
I am. Oh, wait.
This is a cover. Most people don't know that, but it's William Devon's classic soul track. This version is silky smooth, just like the original. It leans into the relaxed vibes. Horace Andy's voice is definitely over some shimmering, eerie production. What I liked about this track is it kind of feels nostalgic and effortless, even though I doubt it was effortless, because there's a lot of production on all of these tracks. Effortlessly cool. Anything else we want to put on that particular?
No.
All right,
good stuff though. Yes.
Yeah, the next track I have is Five Man Army. One of the most hip-hop forward tracks. Definitely the hop in trip hop is found here. Featuring all three rappers, you have 3D, Tricky, and Daddy G trading verses over deep reggae-inflected beats. The bass line is heavy, probably the heaviest of any on the album. Interplay between the vocalists almost gives it like some sort of like weird, trying cryptic energy that they're trying to decipher each other's inner thoughts. There's definitely that nod to the reggae and the dancehall toasting in there as well.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Anything we want to add to Five Man Army?
No.
Because the next track I could probably talk about, I could do an entire podcast on this next track alone.
Because
if there's top five 90s track on the list, this is one of them.
Nice.
Unfinished Symphony. This is, in my personal opinion, Massive Attack never made a better song than this one. Period. The end. Undisputed masterpiece. I find it funny that they called it Unfinished Symphony, and I feel that this is the most finished song on the album by far. It's more vocally developed, sonically developed. The string arrangement is just... it's amazing. The orchestration, the rolling breakbeats... The deep groove, that emotionally charged experience. It's got melancholy, it's got euphoria, and it's cinematic all at the same time. And then there's a remix by Nellie Hooper, which I really can't tell much of a difference in it, but it's a remix.
Oh.
It's kind of like the remixes on The Soft Bulletin by The Flaming Lips. This sounds so different.
No.
Okay, you just wanted to put the song on twice, didn't you?
Yeah. That's what it was.
I wouldn't put it past them.
So, there's that. Speaking of the Flaming Lips, I think they're coming to
August.
Richmond in August with, is it Modest Mouse?
Modest Mouse. I'm wearing Modest Mouse right now.
I'll have to.
Wearing Ricky Rack. under here.
Nice.
So we've got that going on. The next track, though, and I'm going to keep it short, folks. Again, Unfinished Symphony. We could probably do like a side piece on this entire song where I just
I'll
break it down.
I'll show you a side piece. Just kidding.
Yeah, well.
Right.
Yeah, my side piece.
Yeah. Trigger, you play or Trigger?
It's like, Trigger, you're imaginary. You're cheating on your imaginary girlfriend with your imaginary side piece. And it's hard keeping it straight these days. Lately, right?
You need assistant. I'll be
no,
your
it's
assistant.
Daydreaming. I'm all reading it wrong. Daydreaming.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
Daydreaming. It's right there on the album. This one's Paranoid. Point blank, I got paranoia off this particular track. Paranoia and like the energy is frenetic because of the paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
Tricky's and 3D's verses are dense. They're hypnotic. The beat is definitely stripped down, but it has that creeping, shadowy quality like someone's waiting out in the woods. It feels like a late night inner city walk, but it's full of tension and reflection. That's what I got.
Loving is what I got.
Well, I didn't get loving on this particular song.
Yeah, I don't cry when my dog runs away.
I don't get angry at the bills I have.
I don't get angry when my mom smokes pot.
Hits the bottle and goes right to the rock.
That's the loving.
Yeah.
This could be a hit.
Write this down, Hodge.
Yeah. Right. I love how he talks about how he could play the guitar like a riot and then plays the most plain
so
Jane
cute.
Solo.
It's adorable.
Lately, what have you done for me lately? Ooh, that's not this song at all. But lately, no.
That's fun.
This one leans back into the R&B and soul element. It's a little less creepy than some of the other tracks we've come out of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Massive Attack's going to lean way into the creepy going forward. Mezzanine or the 100th Window or whatever, that album goes full on like creepy vibe.
That first track on Mezzanine, Angel. Yes,
I'll creepy. Show you creepy.
Well,
and another
if you look
bass
at,
heavy track.
Yeah, well, if you look at the history that went around with that album too, there's some creepy. I think he was cleared, but there was some creepy going on with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I blame Hodge.
Lately,
wait on
again. It's murky. I've got a dreamlike feel. It's underrated. It's a good track. Album is very seamless. I feel like the mood. Yeah. I feel like I'm trying to describe this massively different song than the rest of them. There's itty bitty changes in all of it, but it's not massive.
No pun
intended.
It's
Baby Attack.
Yeah. And then the last
ray gun attack.
Yeah, the last track, to my understanding, is the most expensive track.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a perfect closer, though. Yeah. I think it's their strongest closer on any album. Of course, this is their best album, so what do you know? Horace Andy Returns. He's very reflective, and he's spiritual. And his lyric, but it's over a very laid back, dub heavy groove. You're meditating on the cycles of life, nature, feeling like it's almost a hymn. The synths are airy, but the deep bass gives it again. We're back to that hypnotic, floaty feel again. We have a peaceful conclusion. This track also features arrangements and textures from Nina Cherry. She's also from Bristol. So Bristol's getting a big nod on today's show. Anything we want to add to that song?
What makes it the most expensive?
I have no idea. It was just what I found. It said it was the most expensive to make.
Okay.
So my guess is probably it took the longest. And
right.
Someone was couldn't get it right.
It was a great.
I was probably involved.
112 takes to take, to pick take two.
Oh, pulling a monster again.
Let's go back to the second take you did. We've done 87.
Yeah, but definitely like, right, the closing, kind of wrapping back to the beginning, in a way.
Yeah.
Great, good way to close it.
Here we go. Brilliant album, folks. Blue Lines. Every album has one or two tracks that I always find, you can find something to like. This is one where I feel every single track is in the right place where it needs to be. Everyone's essential. You couldn't cut one off this album.
Right.
It wouldn't work. The deep grooves, the haunting vocals, again, which is going to be something we mention in the next album too. The atmospheric production really makes this unique. Again, 1991, folks. There's nothing in 1991 that sounds like this. Manchester is sort of dying out and giving way to Britpop. But this is like slowed down Manchester without all the joy. The fun's gone.
Oh, man.
That's the only way I could describe it.
I bet Kelly came in.
Yeah, I could see.
Too much fun. Shut it down.
Wait till he hears it.
Yeah.
I did not say that.
No, and Trigger did not say that. Yeah, that's true.
Don't blame me. All right, so I can't think of anything again that sounds like it. Obviously, this is the piece that brings trip hop into the fold. I don't know if I'd necessarily call this one exactly trip hop because it's not quite fully fledged yet. But the next record obviously took this as a color by numbers. And then expanded the page to add more dots and more colors.
And brought in the, like...
Does that make sense?
Film noir element. Which is a lot of that band.
But yeah, so that's...
That time in the UK, though, between that going on in Manchester, like you brought up, Britpop's coming, there's this noisy other genre going on somewhere else, and shoegaze,
and they're staring at their feet. I love it. Speaking of shoegaze...
Staring at their feet.
I literally started trolling on... Threads because I have nothing better to do.
Uh-oh, here we go.
And I said that post-rock is nothing but progressive shoegaze. Let me tell you something. There are some angry post-rock fans and angry shoegaze fans. They're like, yeah, but no. But you know I'm right. It's progressive shoegaze. Oh, do they play their guitars with a lot of distortion, fuzz, and reverb? It sounds ethereal. But it's not in 4/4. It's progressive shoegaze. Sorry, folks. Damn. Even Sigur Rós, like, if you listen to the first record, clearly shoegaze elements on there, and they really developed it out. They wanted to go with those weird time signatures, and they wanted to talk about beasts who eat sad elves because the sad elf has nothing to look forward to.
I mean, yeah.
It's the shoegaze-y.
Yeah. So we got that. So, speaking of happy albums, you can tell this album by the cover alone is going to be a pile of joy. Beth Gibbons on the cover and her makeup all smeared and looks like she's held down in a chair, so you know.
Oh, God.
This well, even that cover gonna be a thrilling, has some of the sound elements of noir.
Yeah, you know it's going to be a feel-good masterpiece.
It was part of
again,
a Bible for me.
This apparently is what they call an LP.
Ulp.
A long player?
Yeah, long play, yeah.
Play.
Yeah. Vinyl
Have
for
you
hipsters.
What? An LP?
Yes. Wait.
So.
Your face.
This particular album, I feel, took what Massive Attack brought to the table. And I want to say Massive Attack. Don't they get an album? Isn't Mezzanine same year, 94? I think.
No, I thought Mezzanine was more like 98. That's why I asked if there was an album between them.
All right, I'm looking.
It's a later 90s one.
98.
Yeah. Oh, so, no.
Is there one between?
Yes, there's one
Blue
between.
Lines and...
There's Protection.
Protection.
Yeah. That's 94. Right.
And then they do like a No Protection something.
Something
No
like
Protection 95.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're on top of this.
Well, yeah. I mean, no.
Mysterions is the first track. Again, we don't talk about perfect openers. Both of the albums that we looked at track by track, all three, open with great openers.
They do definitely sound different. Like, I don't know if there's such a thing in the trip-hop thing like Massive Attack and Portishead represent two different schools. They definitely sound different. And I don't mean just the vocalists.
They do, but I also hear that
Well, like no, said, there are similarities, but I mean, they do go with, like, they did a, I think the last thing they released was that single, Chase the Terror, or mm-hmm. Terror. That seems to take it back to Safe from Harm, where they have this doom, 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 doom thing going.
But what I found interesting, again, when all three of these albums...
There are similarities,
yes. I definitely heard, okay, you can tell they're from here.
Yeah.
The mystique, the mystery, and the creepiness all feels exactly the same. Especially Mezzanine. I would say Mezzanine and this album complement each other very well.
2 years apart, but yeah, I always look at those two as being more
well,
like...
Well, then I think, yeah, doesn't... And Portishead, their second album was, what, 97, right?
Came out the same week as Oasis' Be Here Now. Mm. I remember going to Best Buy. Yeah.
But yeah, this one, the opener here is perfect.
Yeah.
It's eerie. You get that spy movie aesthetic. I was trying to explain it at work, and I said, this record is brilliant. And they're like, what does it sound like? I said, imagine if, like, you have hip-hop, but it's not a rapper. It's a woman who's trained in opera, but she's singing like she's being held hostage in a 60s spy movie.
So not James Bond.
And it's creepy.
Yeah.
That's the strangest description I've ever heard. Well, that's what it is. I don't know. You got to listen to it for yourself. It's great. And then I played a few of the tracks. I'm like, that sounds really cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm playing it for you, bro.
Well, I said it was a brilliant album. It's one of my favorites. Yeah. They couldn't understand why I was trying to describe it this way. I'm like, there's no other way to describe it.
That's been with them ever since the album came out. Like stuff like you saw, like spy movies and stuff.
But the, this particular track, I don't know if you heard it, but I definitely heard something that what I thought sounded like a theremin.
No, it's in there.
Yeah, vinyl cracking, drums are obviously looped. It's almost like you're watching like a hostage video, but in auditory form. Because Beth's voice in here is just so, it's like, she's almost singing far away from the mic, but yet she's singing to you, and she's warning you of, like, deception and paranoia.
Right.
I can't really... The openers, these are two great tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, all three, they're great tunes. All three have great openers.
Good instrumentation choices.
And honestly, I'm going to try to make sure I have Burial in my collection, too. But I feel if you don't have these records in your collection, folks, fix that.
Fix it. The next one, of course.
The next one...
is the big one.
I remember
one.
The first time I saw this video and the first time I heard it...
It was a Buzz Bin video.
Yeah, but I remember just thinking, is it a joke? I couldn't figure it out. We're going to talk about Sour Times because, again, when you're talking about songs that are different...
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is, what, 94, right? So we're still, like, at the end of the grunge era here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I knew of British music. You know, obviously, you've got... At that time, I'm listening to The Cure pretty heavily. Depeche Mode. Somewhat into New Order-ish.
Oh, that's exactly what I was going to say, New Order.
Speaking of which, found a New Order single today from 1989, 12-inch, 45. It's got a club mix on it.
You found it at
the... Yeah, at the work. It's a good shape.
So it might be there tomorrow?
Should be. Put it out for $5.
Oh, man.
$5, Hodge.
All right. So it's one of the more well-known songs. It's Sour Times. I don't think to this day I've really heard a song that sounded like it other than songs on this album.
It definitely is a different one.
Yeah.
See why I got the Buzz Bin and treatment and all that.
Because it's like you hear like...
Even that's just from the beginning.
Yeah, and then the ringing. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like a strings riff of some sort, but... And there's like bells or chimes or something.
And then the wow, wow, which really adds to the noir spy movie.
Yeah, and then of course it's got the Danube incident sample in there.
What does that mean?
You know the Danube. What?
Well, that's the sample that's in it.
I'll look it up.
And then you've got like the resigned vocals. Noir.
Yeah.
It's all there. Late night desperation. And of course the chorus, because nobody loves me.
It's true.
It's true.
Not like you do.
Aww.
All right. It's devastating. The song never wallows. It's cool. It's hypnotic. I definitely feel like it's a Stockholm Syndrome thing. But, yeah, really cool track. This is another one of those albums, and when we talk about albums that I didn't get at first, and now I'm like, this is one of the best records I've ever heard in my life. When we get into like Radiohead's OK Computer, we're going to talk about that. Disintegration was another album that it took me years to get to.
It was an obsession in high school when it came out. Like I told you, another friend and I were comparing this, and the Downward Spiral was the same year. Not alike, but we are seeing the similarities nonetheless.
Oh, no, definitely I can hear similarities. But
trying to find a way to make a cohesive sound between the two.
I'm just wondering if I was too young when this album came out for me to truly understand it and appreciate it. Because still I want to say about 5 or 10 years ago, it was like on YouTube just randomly. I had that YouTube play. I sat there. Why the hell did I ignore this album? This is bloody brilliant.
I love that.
Still going to get our drummer to mimic some of the sounds from it, but he won't.
Such a jerk.
I think you need an 808.
Don't tell him that. Oh, wait. He's listening. No.
Yeah. Because I believe most of this an 808.
Yeah, I know.
So the next track.
Those are
Strangers. definitely has that hip hop with the tight, drum loop and the creeping jazzy guitar, like the boop, the boop, the boop.
I forgot about the beginning of that. I thought you were doing track 5. It's like, no, that's not that. Oh, yeah, you're right. Strangers. Yeah.
Strangers. What I loved is this is where Beth varies the way she sings a good bit because she has that fragile stuff that's been throughout this entire album. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, she gets forceful on this one. It's mesmerizing was what I wrote. The chorus bursts through with that rawness. It makes it feel like she's pleading through noise.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I got.
That's a good way to put that, actually. Yeah.
Great, again.
It's a great song, guys. You'll be hearing that a lot.
It's a good one.
Told you that.
Yeah. I'm just going to say that we've got, what, 6 more great tracks to go through?
My God.
Yee.
No, yeah, 7 more. Okay. Track 3. I'm not really good with my maths. Speaking of which, I learned something today.
Okay.
Or not today, yesterday. Someone was going through my specific learning disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And dyscalculia, which is what I'm diagnosed
with. Me too. Oh, I wasn't diagnosed, but I know I have that. I hear you.
Did you know that 50% of all dyscalculia diagnosed people also have ADHD?
Interesting.
So, I started thinking, it makes all the sense.
Yeah.
I struggle with grasping the order of large numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not severe to like Larry Mullen of U2, where he
can't
physically count 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, because he was explaining, he's like, yeah, I can't even, he's like, I can go 1, 2, 3, 4. But he was like, if you told me to count out something on a table to 10, so bad I can't do it.
Wow.
So, and I said, that's interesting that he's almost robotic in the way he drums.
Yeah.
Because he can't count. But I remember Danger Mouse complaining. They're like, dude, you sound like a drum machine. You're so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Be less perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That was his big gripe.
Well, you see, I had this thing.
Yeah, but
I can't help it.
But it was interesting.
Yeah, no, that is.
It could be sweet, you know. Could be sweet.
Wait a minute. That was good.
Speaking of which, our next track's called It Could Be Sweet. One of the dreamier tracks on it. This is where I got a little bit of a throwback, more almost a dream pop. Not quite.
Oh, yes.
Not quite. But
maybe
influenced,
you were drawing from it.
Inspired by.
Right.
Because you've got that Rhodes keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Which is such a 60s instrument, especially like in the 60s psychedelic and the jazz movement. The gentle drum shuffle. It's contrasting the unease of this album. It's so different from the rest of it,
mm-hmm.
and yet still somehow works. Because it's a hazy, mm-hmm. late-night mm-hmm. jazz club mm-hmm. feel. Beth definitely more in her, I think, traditional vibe, because I do believe her style of singing outside of Portishead is more, well, obviously she did opera.
Oh,
she's a trained opera singer, so obviously she's done opera.
Yeah.
But if you listen to her solo work, it's more folk, jazz inspired. So I feel this is definitely more of her wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Another song that I'm reminded of, I don't know if you get it, Lullaby by The Cure. I get elements of that here, almost like it's at night,
mm-hmm.
and you're on the fringes of something bad happening, but not quite. So I kind of got that throwback.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue that The Cure definitely had some influence on the mood of these albums.
No. I'm so happy. I don't hear it, guys. So happy.
But yeah, I heard that. Wandering off and thinking about stuff like that.
Oh my gosh.
You have another track called Wandering Star.
I want to do what he did for the third one. This for the longest time, this is like probably my favorite track on this album.
It's so good, right?
Yes.
What I love is...
And then that...
Sometimes when you get songs like this, they're minimal.
Yeah.
And there's not enough there. And for some odd way, it works.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's a masterclass in being minimal. It's very sparse, that trudging beat, that deep bass line. It's almost like... It's like taking fun mm-hmm. and sucking it out of the atmosphere intentionally.
We do those every Sunday.
And...
No.
It's so... Just... Because you can clearly tell that they just had, like, Beth wake up from a nap. Hey, start singing these lyrics.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they were going for. You need to fall asleep and then immediately wake up. We need that vocal stuff.
Wake up. It's time to go to sleep.
She's definitely singing from the depths of exhaustion. She's barely holding on. What is so amazing is
she does that really well.
This album, this particular track is so simple.
Mm-hmm.
But again, when we talk about notes mattering, things being important, the Johnny Mars, the edges, they don't necessarily play a million notes, but they all matter. This is another example of, it's not a lot there, but what's there matters. It's carefully put in its right place.
Yeah.
Just, this is a masterclass. That's a great song.
Mm-hmm.
On a great album.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely deserves to be on this list. I'm almost to the point now, with that exhaustion. I was wondering if, she was starting to feel a little numb.
Mm.
God damn it. I was waiting.
Maybe. Yeah. I wonder if she wrote a song about that.
Next track's called Numb.
I see how this is going to be.
Yeah. Clearly inspired by U2.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be.
Because last year they had Numb, 93.
Mm. Oh, the year before. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't say that. And of course, The Cure has a song called Numb. It's almost like numb's a good... And there's some people are like comfortably numb.
Mm-hmm. That must have heard you say that. But.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah.
Comfortably numb?
Could you repeat?
you can buy... We got several copies of it if you want it. Shut up.
No, we're good.
Yeah.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, you want... Okay.
You don't know me.
She'll be there at opening tomorrow. I need to have the wall.
So this track is not numb, though, because it's building tension.
True.
Again, you have a guitar sample in there. It's manipulated. They took beats from a record that, to my understanding, they took a record and they personally sandpapered it. So they went and found the ones they wanted and ruined
Okay.
And then put them on to get that crackly sound. So everything that they picked, again, is intentional. That's what they wanted.
Uh-huh.
And I guess when you buy it new and you ruin it, you can ruin it to the way you want to.
Yes.
So I've got a whole bunch of records that we have at the store. Same sort of deal. And I'm almost to the point with the DJs that were there today. hey, do y'all like vinyl that sounds like absolute shit? I mean, it plays, but I know everyone likes this crackle. Here you go. Crackles all the way through, even after cleaning.
Hell yeah, dude.
It was a shame. One of them was Parliament record.
Oh.
Totally sucked.
All right.
That cool. was what, oh man, I wanted to put it out so bad too, because it's such a great record. And the price would have been good too, so unfortunately, I couldn't in good faith put a price tag on it.
See, honest.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes. I'm honest.
But, you know, trapping the listener is a spell that they've created on this particular song.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing it in. Beth, this is such a strange delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's singing as if she does not care. But the vocal itself, the lyric, is pleading. It's circular in structure. It's hypnotic in the way she's delivering the lyric. Well, the song, the words are. The words in her delivery do not match. Is that a good way of saying it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a great, great track. Again.
Again.
And you want to know what? The next song's good, too. Yeah. So, it's the emotional piece. I don't really have a way to transition. Sorry,
okay, I was
trying
waiting.
To find a way.
I was waiting.
I mean, you know, sometimes roads aren't always traveled.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Roads.
Roads.
Emotional. The emotional piece of this album, for sure. I feel a lot of this album is about despair.
Mm-hmm.
To the pit of despair.
Whoa.
To the pit.
By the way, that is
Hodge to the pits.
That is like the greatest movie I think maybe ever.
Oh, this is a movie.
Princess Bride?
Oh.
The Pit of Despair?
Yeah, like,
oh my gosh.
You know what?
She knows,
I don't remember
she
anything.
We're gonna, she doesn't.
I was like, if you haven't seen that movie, I was like, well, you all are having like some fun. I'm going to get the DVD. Y'all bring it back later. Tell me it's not the greatest movie ever. But
as
yeah, the roads.
As you wish.
Yep. Yeah. As you wish.
Yes.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. Organs, I heard on this one.
Kidneys?
The beats are very set in the background, not quite so up front. Beth's vocal is completely exposed, like she's the only thing in the room, her and her microphone. She builds from a whisper, almost to a desperate wail. It's very, almost devastating. How can it feel this wrong? Might be one of the most heartbreaking lines in music.
That's true. Yep.
Very, very, very powerful piece. You could almost put it on a pedestal.
What's the next song, Trey?
Pedestal.
Oh, whoa, whoa. Okay.
The next track, Pedestal.
Pedestal.
It's a return to that slinky, noirish jazz hop sound. Definitely the European version of what Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul are doing over here on this side of the pond.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, bass line again, shuffles with the drums, but sort of almost in an evil, sinister way. Beth's lyrics are very disillusioned, and she's dealing with power struggles.
Mm-hmm.
It's subtle. It's unsettling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like a shadow lurking in the corner.
Mm.
Hmm.
That's a good way. Yeah.
I'm wondering if that, you know, shadow's hungry.
Mm.
Maybe it wants a biscuit.
Oh, very sentimental track.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I'll say it. R.I.P. Susan. She got her nickname from this song.
Oh.
To the one person might hear this and know what that meant.
Oh. Biscuit.
Biscuit.
This is definitely a dark, just dark, dark track.
It's
probably a little bit more out there. It's definitely not a conventional time signature.
No.
Scratchy vinyl textures again, wailing samples. It would not surprise me if this was the song it took them the longest to make. If I were to look it up and they said, no, this one took the longest, yeah, I'd believe it. Because it sounds the most complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Even though... It's a really hard way to put it, because none of the song... I don't know if complicated is the right word.
Involved?
There we go. I think I like that word better, because... what I like about this album, and I know it wasn't simple to put together, because there's a lot of bits and pieces they had to snip and snap together. It all sounds just so simple in your ears, but it's not.
Right, because you're like, oh, this is easy. No.
And I guess what makes this track kind of stand out, because you hear again, you're like, yeah, this is definitely not 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's ghostly. Fever dreamed. Fragmented, disoriented, unsettled.
Good
all
words.
Adjectives that I have in here. Yeah. Beth's vocals are just, they something.
Yeah.
Do we have anything we want to add to that?
You keep covering everything. Like, all those adjectives were great for that, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a great record.
Check it out.
Yeah.
And I wish I could transition, folks. I'm running out.
Oh,
They finally stumped me. The last track is called Glory Box.
Oh, come on. You couldn't find a way?
No, unfortunately. couldn't come out of glory out of that track. I was like, oh, my God.
A great ending track. Great song. It's been used in movies, too, right?
Used in movies all the time. And, of course, Isaac Hayes' Ike's Rap 2 sample, again. Used in that one. Found that sample at work, but I don't want to spend that kind of money on the album.
No, understood.
Yeah. But yeah, it's her lyrics do not match the groove given on this song, but that's why I think I like it.
Yeah.
Because it's very sultry, almost. She's world weary. Trigger, why do you put these stupid WWWs together? You know you can't emphasize them. The chorus. Give me a reason to love you. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, go ahead.
It's a demand. It's a plea. It's frustrated.
Yes.
And it's longing. And when that guitar solo kicks in, holy shit.
With everything placed just right.
Ooh. It's like that final outburst of that pent-up emotion before the album fades into silence.
Yeah.
And another thing that I like about this album is it leaves you wanting more.
Yeah.
Too bad they... Yeah. Whatever. But yeah, the final thoughts on this album, it's a masterpiece of mood and tension.
Yes.
Every track is designed perfectly to pull you deeper into its shadowy world.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel maybe the reason this album is ranked higher than the previous album is while the album previous was a blueprint for how to make this record, this record's fully like... The ideas that they wanted sound like all of them got onto the album.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember reading about the Blue Lines. They weren't really happy with the final product. They said it doesn't sound finished. And I guess you could argue that maybe. But then again, I don't know why they're so critical of it. Like, it's so unique. It's like nothing of its time. But this album is so haunting. It's so atmospheric.
Yeah.
It's
a great way to end.
I would say, I'm going to say for sure, these are the two. If you only own two trip hop albums, folks, these are the two to own.
Anything by Tricky? I know what you mean by two. I get it.
Yeah. The Maxi, that album.
It's almost like if you went one to the other. Could you see going from Blue Lines into Dummy and then coming back to Mezzanine?
Maybe.
Because of the darkness.
Part. Yeah. Because there's that post-millennium tension album that I have by Tricky.
Christian Sands is on that.
Yeah. But my thing is, though, Tricky...
I just always think of him, too. And there's other artists, too.
He has... Tricky can make a really great song. I've yet to hear a Tricky album where I was like, I need this whole album.
Oh, okay. There's good songs, but there's good songs. Cohesive album. In that way,
it's not very cohesive. I want to say Christian Sands, She Makes Me Want to Die, on that, are two songs on that that stick out to me, and the rest of the album I could pretty much.
Because it was what 2000 did Blowback, which is like starts off with a song with Alanis Morissette, Flea's on it somewhere in the album. It's like it just jumps.
And another one again. There's songs in there that I really like.
Yeah,
and then there's the rest of it. I'm like, this isn't even music. Because there's some songs on there that I would argue aren't songs. There's no rhythm. There's no melody. What is it? It's just he's in the noise in the studio banging on something that makes a noise. Hey, this is a great track, isn't it? Sure, go for it.
Found out my secret.
But yeah, the jazz samples we heard in our last record, the hip hop beats, Beth Gibbons. Man, she puts a vocal performance together that. Is so cinematic and so unsettling. Mm-hmm. But here's where sadly, I don't think they were ever able to find this again. The next two records are big step downs, in my personal opinion.
Really?
There's a couple of songs I like on the Portishead second album.
Self-titled.
I have two copies of for some stupid reason. So if you need a vinyl, got one. Played once.
Okay. I do.
Hodge says, yes, please.
And third had some, I don't know.
And we have like two used copies at work and a new one. So plenty. Portishead, the second album.
Oh, they meant the third. Or the one called
and then third. And the third one don't even.
Well, I actually did like Machine Gun on that. I think there's some differences that I don't think people pick up on.
No, there's some differences because that's what I said. Is that they went in an entirely different direction for third.
I mean, like, I was talking about that song. I was talking about. A few months ago with somebody, like just that but there's a difference if you really listen to it where there's I don't know what he was doing, but
apparently like there were some tensions even in the making of that record, and after that band apparently officially dissolved.
They do have that very famous live album, Live in New York.
Didn't even know about that one.
It's
a very well received live album they did after, it must have been after the second one because some of those songs were on it.
Yeah. And then I guess
they did a performance too, a video for it.
Should we wrap her up?
We know what we're gonna do next time.
Yes, I do actually.
Ooh, it's yummy.
Alright, so what I Mark, you said it before we started the show that you got reminded of The Cure or Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
And that was my first line. The show closes. Today's show felt like a return to our Cure Nine Inch Nails show in a way.
Mm-hmm.
All these records have some sort of dark mystery to them.
But I don't feel so bummed like I did after we did the last.
No. It's not quite so catastrophic. But at the really same time, I definitely got that dark sort of vibe from it.
Probably part of the appeal I like about trip hop, because I mean, I do like, you know, like the hip hop beats and everything, but I think why I was drawn to trip hop. More so than hip-hop itself for a while there.
But interestingly enough, you have to consider that Nine Inch Nails and The Cure influenced these albums in some way, shape, or form.
And maybe in the case of Nails, and they came back and took in trip-hop at times.
But again, all three of these albums belong on the list, and if you told me that only the city of Atlanta would have more albums than Bristol, England on this list, if we were betting money, I'm losing. I would have never put that together. Sadly, trip hop dies not long after the Portishead's second album. And one could argue that the lack of mystery on that album alone was sort of the death of the genre.
Oh.
I thought it was still around. I mean, just not as a big, hot thing.
Gotcha. That's what I'm saying. You could argue it was the start of Massive Attack.
Bringing it back.
And what can I say about Massive Attack? The record is revolutionary. They hang around to roughly, 2010? So they hang around a good bit longer. Well, not a good bit. I mean, Portishead took just a lot longer to make an album after their second. That's like 2008, right?
Oh, you're talking about the recorded history. Because like, well, Massive Attack, just did like their Mezzanine.
Yeah, they had Mezzanine and the 100th Window, and then there's...
Like, they just had toured in the last few years. Like,
yeah.
I don't think they've done any recording.
No, they've... And even then, I would say the 2010 record really isn't a trip-hop record. Massive Attack again, they're revolutionary. Mm-hmm. For fans of the show House, again, the theme song was by Massive Attack, Teardrop. One could argue that after Mezzanine, even Massive Attack really wasn't able to catch the magic.
And that was with Liz Fraser of Cocteau Twins.
Yeah. Right?
Teardrop. So you hear her in the House.
Yeah. So, Trip Hop, it came and it went, and it sure was an interesting genre while it was here. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to keep going in the groundbreaking music genre. Man.
Okay.
And I'm going to keep it in the electronic world next week. Wait. I want to do Kraftwerk and Daft Punk, since everyone in both of those bands are apparently robots.
I mean, I just saw them the other week. They were definitely... No, they're not robots. But they want to be.
Yeah. And one of these days I'll get to go see them. Maybe. Y'all got to stop having concerts on school nights, y'all. Hey, all of you guys that are over the age of 50, and in Kraftwerk's case, 60.
70s.
Your fans are not 15. We got to work. Over by 7, home by 9, well, in bed by 9:15.
Kraftwerk at least looks out for people at their shows that's all seating.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
you
nice.
You can sit down.
But, you know, I got to work the next day.
I know.
Come on, man.
Well, we got to work.
Very great. Very great visually. It was awesome. Oh, I guess we can talk about that next week.
Yeah. But I'm excited to compare the two records because there are some striking similarities between the ones we're looking at.
Pretty sure Kraftwerk ripped off Daft Punk. Wait.
Oh.
No, I'm
just kidding. That's what's
No.
That does it for this week's show. Life's too short for bad coffee and bad music. And that being said, for Hodge, Monster, I'm Trigger.
Hey.
And we'll see you next time.